Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Stacey. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I was about to say good.
I should know better than to ask, like, right at the end when you're, like, wrapping up everything with the book.
Yeah. I was about to say good, and then I was like, yeah, that wouldn't be the truth. But we're in the home stretch of finishing the book, and I'm really looking forward to this weekend. Is the Balance Bites seminar in the D.C. area where I live. And so all of my paleo buddies will be coming into town, and it's the last time that Liz and Diane are going to be teaching together, at least this year, maybe, you know, for who knows how long, ever, I don't know. So they'll be in town. Liz and Diane will be in town, and Bill and Haley from Primal Palette will be in town, and so Matt and Matt and I, like, told ourselves no matter what, if snowquestration happens, which is what's anticipated for the DC area this week, by the time this podcast airs, we will probably be covered in snow. Come snow
you will
or
find
not,
some snowshoes and you will walk. Yes,
we will find a way to finish the book so that by the time the weekend comes and our friends are in town, we can be done and relax and not worry about it. So
sounds like fun.
Yeah, and I did start back at CrossFit. I hadn't CrossFitted in almost 2 weeks between being away at work and then having some signs of adrenal fatigue. I made myself kind of quit everything and go to bed earlier and de-stress a little for a week. So finally felt better Saturday, and I've been to CrossFit 3 times and I'm already feeling better. So that's me.
Can I just throw out, like, that is such a wonderful role model of listening to your body and taking care of it and not pushing through something, but instead, like, taking the time off to relax and sleep. Like, that's just something I really want people to understand, because it's sort of human nature to get a little bit over enthusiastic when it comes to especially at new exercise programs. And it's not just CrossFit. I mean, you can overdo it in just about anything. And taking that break early before it gets to be burnout, like, that allows you to keep going. So I'm just saying, like, good job.
Thanks. I mean, I wasn't doing a really great job with my food. I was eating, like, a bazillion paleo treats, and I was
going to totally undermine what I just said.
No, what I'm saying, though, is that I was recognizing that that was happening, right? Yeah. I was realizing that I was eating a bunch of treats and that I wasn't sleeping, which is like a do loop for me, because if I don't sleep, then I want more treats. And when I eat treats, then I'm not tired and blah, 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 blah. and I could just totally tell that my body was wrecked and that if I even attempted to do some sort of intense workout, that it wouldn't work. So I laid off for a week, which was really hard and somewhat embarrassing. I mean, it's hard to tell someone, like, no, I'm not coming because I don't want my adrenals to tap out. But I said it, and I stood by it, and I feel good about it. And then when I went back, you know, I gave it my all, and I'm back, and I'm feeling much better, and I'm not so worried about my own health. I couldn't quite say good, but I am feeling in control right now, which is great. Also, last thing about me, because I know you have something exciting to talk about.
I do have something. Did I tell you I had something exciting I wanted to talk about? I do have something that I want to say, but you finish first.
I was talking about the other thing.
The other thing? There's another thing? I have a thing. You talk.
It's not a thing I'm talking about. Anyway, I was on Paleo Magazine Radio, episode number 5 on women's health with Krista Scott Dixon of Stumptious and Shelley Good. It aired, I think, yesterday, March 3rd, but obviously anyone listening to it at this point can go check it out. But I do talk a little more in detail about my overall health journey and thoughts on all that stuff and disordered eating and how to feed kids, all the stuff that we kind of talk about on here on that episode. So if that's something people are into, go check it out.
That's cool. Okay, my thing?
Yeah.
I have 2 things. Can I have 2 things?
I'm going to limit you. Yeah, go.
So the first thing is I found out that I got one of the prime 40-minute talk slots at the Ancestral Health Symposium.
Of course you did.
August, and I'm going to be talking about the role that micronutrient deficiencies play in autoimmune disease. So it's going to be like basically the first quarter of chapter 3. So just chapter 3 is a big one, guys. But I'm really excited because they approached me because I've just had my nose to the grind, not paying attention to things like abstract deadlines. And I just feel really honored that I was on their radar and that I'm just really excited to be like a part. Like when I look at the list of presenters, it's just so cool to see my name in that list. And I also have to really thank my husband for having a last name that begins with a B, because my name's first. And it's like literally from like Sarah Ballantyne to Rob Wolf. Like that's the list. And it's awesome. I love alphabetical order. It's so cool.
There were a lot of acronyms on that list. I was like, holy heck, there are some smart people going to be talking at AHS this year.
It's like a who's who list almost. It's a pretty awesome list of like the people who are into the science of it, because that's really the goal of this particular conference, is to get into the science and get into recent research and new developments and stuff like that. So if anybody out there has been humming and hawing about whether or not they want to go to AHS, I highly recommend you come and listen to me talk.
And for people who don't know, that's the Ancestral Health Symposium, which is slotted for the summer in Atlanta.
Yes. So the other cool thing about it for me is I live in Atlanta, so I don't have to travel very far. I get to sleep in my own bed, which is my favorite way to do conferences. I'm sleeping in hotel beds.
Cool. Matt and I are, well, I'm speaking at Paleo FX, I'm pretty sure, for 2 panels, the end of March. And we'll also be signing Eat Like a Dinosaur and have some promotional material for people to check out for Beyond Bacon. So I wish you could come, but yeah. People can check me out at PaleoFX, and then they probably check us both out at AHS, but definitely they will check you out for 40 minutes straight.
We should do like a live show from AHS. I'm just thinking ahead out loud. Okay, I have one more thing. I'm going to be announcing it Wednesday, so by the time this show airs, it'll already be there. But I'm actually running a cartooning competition for the book. Since the beginning, I've really wanted to include some cartoons to illustrate some of the more sort of emotional aspects as I'm going through. And the book's going to be very visual, and it's going to have medical illustrations, and it's going to have a lot of graphics. But the cartoons is just sort of like a fun thing that I've wanted to include. And I've realized that as I am, frantically trying to finish the actual book, that it's not something that I don't even actually have the skills to do. Like, I can doodle, but I don't really do cartoons. So if anybody out there likes to draw, enjoys making little cartoons, I'm running a competition. There's a bunch of guidelines on my site with a bunch of the sort of thematic ideas of what I'm looking for. And if I just invite people to draw something, and if I accept it, you'll be fully credited for your illustration in the book. And I'll also be putting together a gallery of all of the submissions at some point in the future. That kind of depends on exactly how many submissions I get. But just if there's anybody out there with some talent with a pen and paper who would like to get one of their illustrations published, this is kind of a cool thing. So hopefully people will be interested in submitting some artwork for this competition.
Cool. Well, the thing that I was thinking of, you still haven't mentioned.
Oh, really?
Sarah.
What's my other thing?
Is there someone who you want to introduce who's joining us today?
Oh, yeah.
You are so obviously not the person that usually introduces people.
And we do have to introduce. I'm very excited because we have Tara Grant with us, who I've been chatting with, and I'm using air quotes. No one can see my air quotes. Chatting with, because I'm in email. But I'm really, really excited to have Tara Grant join us today. We are doing another weight loss show, and I can't think of a better blogger to have join us for this kind of topic. So I'm sorry I rattled on about other things, because clearly they were not as cool as having Tara with us. Tara, do you want to say hi and tell people about yourself and where they can find you, and give the elevator speech about who Tara is?
Sure. First off, thanks for having me. It was so hard to stay quiet during that introduction. I just wanted to say congratulations to both of you. Sarah, Ancestral Health Symposium is amazing. You're going to love it. And Stacey, you were at Paleo FX last year. So congratulations on going again. That's fantastic. Let me see. Who am I? my name's Tara. I've been Primal for about 4 years now, and I've had a pretty good deal of success losing weight and getting rid of a lot of health problems. And I blog about it over at primalgirl.com.
So, Tara, because this is a weight loss show and we all have bragging rights with weight loss, you've lost a substantial amount of weight following a primal diet.
I don't think I've lost as much as you guys have, though. I started at 253, and then I got down to my goal was like 170. I would have been happy with that, but then it just kept going down, and I got down to about 153, so a 100-pound loss, and I maintained that for a while. But then I started to lose more weight, and I didn't know why. I wasn't trying to lose weight, and there didn't seem to be anything I could do to keep it on. Then I started getting tired all the time, and I was slightly anemic, and then I started having all these abdominal problems, and I realized I had fructose malabsorption and probably small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So I started to heal my gut, and when I did that, I put about 20 pounds on. So I'm right up about 155 now. I'm struggling with a lot of body image issues because I was down so low, and then I've put a little bit of weight back on. It's amazing when you finally reach your goal and then you surpass your goal, how much that can play with your head. Sometimes, I would wake up in the morning and check, like, oh, am I still slim? Because I would have a dream that in the middle of the night I had put all the weight back on, anxiety dreams, things like that. So I'm kind of struggling with that right now, but I'm maintaining, and my gut is almost entirely healed, and I'm certainly feeling a lot better.
I just got goosebumps while you were talking, Tara, because I don't know if Sarah told you this, but I've actually kind of been holding off on having a weight loss show for a while, just because I personally have been struggling with the exact same things that you're talking about, in that, you know, when I finished the book last year and I had a huge autoimmune flare and I had to focus on taking care of my health rather than weight loss. And I refused to intermittent fast anymore because I know it killed my hormones. And there was just a bunch of stuff that I had to focus on myself. And, you know, you can't focus on weight loss and healing at the same time. You have to choose one. And sometimes while you're healing, you lose weight, and that's great, but that's not happening for me because I've already lost over 100 pounds, and, you know, my body is healing right now, and I have the same emotional struggles that you're going through. And I feel honestly embarrassed to show up at Paleo FX looking the same way that I did last year. Like I should somehow because I eat a paleo template, I should have lost more weight at this point. And the truth of the matter is I'm 10 times healthier than I was when I went last year, because I had adrenal fatigue and I had an autoimmune condition that was flaring up, and I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't taking care of myself. And, you know, I had a million problems health-wise, but I just think it's, you know, really important for people to understand that this is a journey. And just like, you know, it's so important that you figured out what was causing you health issues. Like the weight loss wasn't a healthy weight loss. That was a detrimental exactly. thing to your health. You realized that and you focused on health and it caused you to gain a little bit of weight, but weight isn't the end all and be all of health. You found health, but because of, you know, gaining weight. So.
Yeah. I feel like people are judging us because of the way that we've chosen to live our lives and to, you know, to spread the word and to help other people. And I feel like I have to be on at all times. I have to look perfect at all times. If I'm, you know, meeting with a client or trying to tell somebody about how this is a healthy way to live, I feel like I need to, kind of exude the healthiness and the perfect fit body that so many people have come to expect. And if I'm feeling a little bloated, or it's the week before my period, I'm, you know, just not feeling all that attractive, it's harder for me to get up that confidence. And it's really tough being in the limelight, like all three of us are. But at the same time, there was a lot of talk about this at Paleo FX last year, because not very many of the women were completely cut. You know, what you would look at, a Victoria's Secret magazine and the way that they're all photoshopped and absolutely perfect. There weren't very many of us like that there. And people were talking about, you know, how women are supposed to look. How did women look back in the Paleolithic times? It was a good thing if you could store some fat. It meant that you were fertile, that you could have children, you know. And so I think maybe we're supposed to be a little imperfect, maybe carry a little fluff with us, especially at certain times of year. We can't be in peak performance condition 365 days a year. Even Olympic athletes take time off, and they get pudgy too when they're not working out all the time.
Well, and I want to focus that. I went to an event this weekend and I realized that there is a different definition for health for some people. And the definition of peak performance equaling health is not one that I personally endorse. I mean, there are people who can perform very well who aren't perfect pictures of health. Most professional athletes have a shorter lifespan than the average American because they're pushing their bodies to extremes, and that's not necessarily a healthy thing. I'm not saying that all athletes aren't healthy, but I think it's really important for people to understand that, you know, if you're eating a paleo diet, but you're not following the lifestyle, and therefore you feel like, you know, going completely off the rails once a week is your 20%, and you, you know, eat friendly brownie sundaes, and you think that's fine because it's not a work day and you'll perform fine, you know, when you go back to the gym, that's not health. You know, that's destroying your gut. That's doing a lot of unhealthy things to your body that, as people in this movement who aren't necessarily pictures of perfect, you know, body type, and my burpees don't look like other people's burpees in the CrossFit, but you know what? I'm there and I'm doing them and I'm getting my sweat on, and I know that I'm taking care of myself all the time outside of the gym. So I just think, like, these are things that people really need to get focused on and in alignment with when they're thinking about weight loss, because it's not just about performance. It's not just about, you know, looking a certain way. It's about finding health. Weight is, you know, supposed to be a measure of health. It is not supposed to be some sort of picture of perfection in order for society to accept you more.
And it's a measure of health. It's not the measure of health.
I said that, right? I didn't say
that. Yeah, no, okay. No. And I'm just emphasizing, I'm sort of emphasizing that there's more to evaluating a person's health than just their weight to height ratio or their body fat percentage, if you want to get even more accurate. Like, there's so many more, we're so much more complicated than that.
Yeah. And all three of us have lost over 100 pounds. So yeah. Cut me a break. Like, we're never gonna
like just carrying your like before picture around in your wallet. And you're like, are you judging me? Because this is where I came from.
I told Matt, I want to get
I actually do carry my before
that's so awesome.
Around in my wallet. And it's, I've got it on my business cards on the back. I've got my before and my after just to remind me where I've been and where I could end up again if I'm not careful. I got there because of a sugar addiction. I'm sure we all have it.
Yeah.
I still have it, and I have to fight every day. And I'll tell you, I ate a Cadbury cream egg yesterday. I allow myself one a year, and I had it yesterday, and I was hoping that it wasn't going to be good, but it was. And I all day today, I was tempted to go get in the car and go back to the store and just buy a box of them. And just after having one taste, it is that easy for me to go back. So I'm sure that you guys have talked about sugar addiction and stuff on the show before. I think it's something a lot of people struggle with.
It's my joke that I say I come from ice cream. Like, when people are like, you know, I come from an athletic background, I'm like, I come from ice cream. I too have problems with sugar, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I find even when I'm eating, you know, really clean and, you know, fairly low sugar and physically everything is coming together, you can beat the physical sugar addiction, but I have such a emotional history with food. It's like a bad boyfriend. And I have all of these associations with food as comfort and with food as solace and with food as company and with food as entertainment. And those emotional connections with food don't go away. So I still, when I get stressed, I mean, the first thing I think of is like, what can I eat? And it's, it takes a lot of awareness. It takes a lot of self-control, and it takes a lot of, you know, sometimes giving in, you know, and allowing myself that, and sometimes, you know, sticking to my guns and not. There's sort of a balance, but I suspect that it'll probably be a struggle that I'll always have, that whole, you know, food was such a, well, still is a huge part of my life. It's just healthier food, but there's still, you can still overdo it on healthy food. Like, you can still, you can still make, you know, grain-free, dairy-free treats that, you know, are completely sweetened with fruit, and they're still not good foods. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've found paleo ways to make candy bars and cookies and cakes and breads and nut balls and all kinds of treats. I think I've replaced pretty much everything at one point or another, and then have given up. It's never quite as good as what I remember. So it does fill one aspect of the craving, but not all of it. And I'm trying to train myself to rely on not alternatives to the same thing, but to find new foods and new meals that I can turn to for comfort, that are very healthy and very paleo.
Cool. Agreed.
So I guess that means it's a great point to move on to Science with Sarah.
Yeah. What are you going
to
talk about?
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science.
So today for Science with Sarah, I wanted to talk a little bit about insulin and leptin resistance, because we're talking about weight loss, and we all come from a history of metabolic derangement, which means we were at least at one point in our lives, we were almost certainly insulin and leptin resistant. And it's something that I think a lot of people battle with. And I get a lot of questions that are related to one or the other. And really, the key thing that I want to talk about is that these are two hormones that go hand in hand. They are really the hormones of fat. They're the hormones that communicate your current energy status with your brain. And so there's neurotransmitters in your brain that have receptors to both insulin and leptin. Insulin and leptin are hormones that are released. They circulate in your blood. They cross the blood-brain barrier, and they interact with hormones to communicate to the brain. So insulin is something that most people are familiar with. I've talked about it on the show before. I mean, I know I've talked about leptin as well, but bear with me. So insulin is the hormone that's primary job is to shuttle glucose after you've eaten out of the blood and into the cells of your body. Your liver is sort of the primary organ for deciding, how that glucose is going to be stored. So your muscles can take some. If you've taken in more carbohydrates in a meal than your muscles can absorb, your liver packages it up into fats and sends it to the fat cells. Insulin has a really complicated communication with the brain in terms of communicating satiety or the feeling of fullness. So in a normal situation, when your insulin goes up, it can tell your brain that you've eaten and you're good. But there's a whole group of hormones that have sort of a complex interplay in terms of communicating hunger to the brain. Insulin in other situations can actually tell the brain that you should eat more. And this seems to happen when you have a very carbohydrate dominant meal. So it seems to happen when there's a lack of some other hunger hormone signals, if you've not eaten enough fat or protein. And this is, I think, really relevant to our discussion today, because we're talking about weight loss. And one of the dominant diet habits that people have that sort of facilitates weight gain to the point that certainly we all experienced is eating foods that are, too much energy than what we need, and typically far too many carbohydrates than what we need. That's, the most common sort of bad food habit. Not that that's the only way that you can gain weight, but I think that's sort of probably the most relevant to what I want to talk about in terms of insulin and leptin resistance. So what happens when you are chronically consuming too many calories from sugars, your blood sugar is high, your insulin is high, there's sort of a maximum amount of insulin that can cross the blood-brain barrier. And what happens is when your insulin's even higher than that and it's high for a long time, your body starts decreasing the number of insulin receptors in various cells. That can happen in the brain. It can happen in the muscles. So the cells in your body do not detect insulin as sensitively as they did before. And that's what's called insulin resistance. So it means that your body's still pumping out insulin, but you need more insulin in order to get the signals to the cells in your body in order to get, and that also means in order to get glucose into the cells in your body, and then also to do the communication with the brain. So leptin is, in a lot of ways, a very similar hormone. Insulin is released by the pancreas. Leptin is released by the cells that line the stomach in response to feeding, but most predominantly it's released by your fat cells, you know, the cells in your body whose job it is to store energy and then provide that energy when you need it. So in the sense of fat, there's other ways the liver can store energy, but this is purely fat storage for energy. So that helps communicate to the brain, you know, when it's released by the stomach that you've eaten. But it also helps communicate what your energy storage status is to your brain. So very, very similarly to insulin, if you have a lot of leptin being secreted, which when you're overweight, you do, your brain can reduce the number of receptors to leptin. And so it can't detect that communication, that signal that we've got lots of stored energy. But leptin is tricky because eating too much and being overweight both cause leptin resistance. But starvation and calorie restriction and fasting also cause leptin resistance. So there's a balance. There's sort of like this perfect medium where leptin is really, really well regulated. And then there's like too much or too little, and you cause basically the same effect of leptin resistance. And so why this is relevant to losing weight, it becomes really, really important to regulate both insulin and leptin so that you can be sensitive to both insulin and leptin. So the way you regulate insulin is by regulating blood sugar. So that's not necessarily a low carbohydrate approach, but it's a measured carbohydrate approach. So that means that you are never eating too many carbohydrates at any given meal. And you can do that as low carbohydrate, but you don't have to. It's certainly lower carbohydrate than the standard American diet, but a standard paleo diet where you're eating lots of fruits and starchy vegetables and vegetables in general sort of qualifies under, you know, fairly good blood sugar management. With leptin, it's a case of taking in, if you're trying to lose weight, taking in only a little bit less energy than the energy requirement of your body. Because if you take in a lot less, and where that line is not really known. But it basically means that you don't want to go too fast. So if you take in, you know, maybe 10 to 20% less energy than what your body actually needs to maintain your weight. And I am saying that calories matter. They're not everything. Hormone regulation is huge, but calories matter as well. So you've taken a little bit less calories than you need, then that's sort of like that perfect situation where you can lose weight and maintain your leptin sensitivity. If you lose weight too quickly, you tend to make yourself leptin resistant, and that actually increases hunger and also makes it more difficult to access stored energy. So you end up with that, you're tired, you're not feeling well, and you're really, really hungry, which is one of the main reasons why people have such a hard time maintaining fast weight loss. And that's why everyone says, you know, low and slow, 1 to 2 pounds a week is great. And that really boils down to trying to maintain leptin sensitivity. So there's a lot that's not known about these hormones. There's a lot of information that's contradictory. There's a lot of interplay between these hormones and other systems in the body. But that's sort of the like relevant to weight loss. Regulating blood sugar is really important. Having an energy deficit is important for losing weight, but not too much of an energy deficit. So patience is a virtue, which my mother used to tell me all the time when I was a kid.
I just want to endorse everything you just said. That's all.
That's right. Wow.
Yeah. I definitely, you know, we've talked before with Stephanie Ruper about intermittent fasting and weight loss, but just to emphasize that exact problem, you know, my leptin and cortisol and insulin regulation was wiggity whack. And
there's actually a direct between leptin and cortisol.
Yeah. And as a result, I think it's a huge part in why weight loss is more of a resistant problem on the back end of that.
Mm-hmm. You
know, huge weight loss that I had, and now it's way harder because I'm having to fix all my hormones and, you know, kind of refocus on that stuff. So
now I've heard that Stephanie Ruper, you guys are talking about it, talking about that intermittent fasting isn't all that great for women. I've been doing intermittent fasting now for about 2 years, and I'm doing great. I do it every day, and I haven't been having any problems with it at all. What are some of the things that I should watch out for, Sarah? If I think I'm doing really well with intermittent fasting, what might be some of the symptoms that might crop up first that would be the warning signs?
I think the issue with intermittent fasting is that there seems to be a more variable response in women. I think men sort of as a general rule benefit more uniformly from it, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. With women, we seem to be more sensitive to having a cortisol reaction to intermittent fasting. And it's certainly not that all women have it. I think it kind of depends a little bit on how you do it, where your health is, what you're eating when you break your fast, what you're eating before you start your fast, how hydrated you are, how well you're sleeping, how stressed you are. But essentially, the issue with intermittent fasting for women can be boiled down to women are more sensitive to having the sort of stress reaction to intermittent fasting. And Stephanie Ruper has a fantastic post that we will definitely link to in the show notes, because I will get that link for Matt, that is really goes through the science of intermittent fasting and shows the studies that are done in, I mean, even the animal studies that are done in all male animals. And it's very, very common for, I'll just throw this out there, for medical research that's done in animals to only be done in male animals because of how messed up the results can get with female hormones. Like once you add female hormones into the mix, it can be really, really hard to tease apart a result from a specific experiment. So most of the information out there has been done in men or male animal models. The results that have been done in female animal models have not been conclusive. And I think that's because of a cortisol response. So it's not completely understood exactly why this would happen in some women and not others. I think it has a lot to do with how well your cortisol is managed on a day-to-day basis. But what happens in some people's bodies, and I'm very confident it happens in mine, if I try like one intermittent fast every 3 or 4 weeks, I'm great. It feels awesome. If I get really like excited about it and I decide to do it again a couple days later, it totally doesn't work for me. And so I think it says my cortisol's very tenuous. So what happens is you can have basically a cortisol spike. And depending on where your baseline is, that can be sort of an abnormal cortisol in the morning. And you can end up with either chronically elevated cortisol, or you can end up with sort of that tired and wired cortisol profile where it's sort of peaking a couple of times during the day, especially peaking in the evening, and then you don't get the low that you're supposed to get overnight. So the symptoms to look for are trouble sleeping, trouble falling asleep, waking up at night, not feeling rested in the morning. Maybe you don't normally have to pee in the night, but you have to start getting up to pee in the night. There's a relationship between cortisol and kidney function, which is why that happens. Your kidneys are supposed to slow down overnight. But if your cortisol is not well managed, your kidneys keep going at a higher rate producing urea than they're supposed to. So that's why that happens. feeling headachey, feeling moody, feeling like you can't handle a stressful situation. Like if something happens out of the ordinary and you don't feel like that's how you would normally deal with that situation. Those are all, you know, feeling tired. If you happen to have an autoimmune disease, if you see symptoms of your autoimmune disease that are maybe getting a little bit worse, those are all things to look for, that could indicate that your cortisol is not doing great things. Other sort of more long-term signs of cortisol mismanagement would be, you know, keeping weight or putting on weight around the middle, having sort of the same sort of stuff that we've talked about, having that burst of energy in the evening, feeling like you cannot get out of bed without your cup of coffee in the morning. So those are, you know, things to watch out for. For me, I feel really good if I intermittent fast, you know, roughly once a month. And if I try and push it more than that, I feel cranky. I feel like once I start eating again, like I can't stop eating. If I just fast once, I eat a great meal and I feel great and I feel happy and I feel really energetic and I feel jazzed. If I do it more, it ends up becoming like I'm almost overfeeding to compensate. I get even hungrier and snacky and I can't stop eating. And I could just kind of figure that's counterproductive. So those are sort of, and then I also, that if I do it too often, then I notice disruptions in my sleep. So that's the other really big alarm bell for me. That was probably a way more detailed answer than Tara actually asked for.
Well, actually,
that was perfect. I wake up in the morning feeling unrested, but I'm dealing with allergies here in a new place. So that's what I had attributed that to, but it may very well be a cortisol thing. So now that I have that list of symptoms to watch out for, if I start to experience any of those things, I'll start eating breakfast and see if it changes.
And I would say two things to consider are that, you know, it took me a year of intermittent fasting on a regular basis. I mean, I did it 5 times a week, I think. And that was natural. I just was listening to the rhythms of my body and I wasn't hungry, so I wouldn't eat. But what I realized on the back end is that it was causing also some nutrient deficiencies because I wasn't digesting food properly when I would eat that big meal. So I think there's the cortisol problem that we've talked about, and all the hormonal side of it, but there's also a digestive function piece that not everybody has as good and healthy of a digestive function as other people. And we don't really talk a lot about, you know, poo chatter on this podcast. You can listen to the Balanced Bites podcast for information on that. But I think, you know, another thing for people to really pay attention to is, you know, I always attributed it to, oh, those eggs that I ate weren't good quality, or, you know, I had a million excuses why every single time I would eat a meal after an intermittent fast, I wouldn't digest it properly. Turns out I don't have a gallbladder. There are many things that can cause bad digestion, but my function was I didn't have a gallbladder, and therefore my digestive function was weakened. And eating a large meal after fasting for a long period of time is work for your body to digest that food. And that's another thing that people should really be watching for, because a year of improper digestion caused huge deficiencies for me. And it was another reason why I was craving food all the time, because I wasn't getting the nutrients that I needed. Therefore, my body was saying, we need more food, we need more food, we need more food. But it wasn't able to absorb the nutrients that I was giving it when I was eating food. So,
yeah, I had the opposite reaction. I was having symptoms of the nutrient deficiency, bumps in my fingernails. My hair was starting to get brittle. It wasn't looking quite as good, but my appetite turned off completely. I had to force myself to eat. And it became quite a problem towards the end. Having to force myself to eat, no appetite whatsoever. And I felt fine the whole time, but I knew that there was something wrong. So it's funny how it manifested in opposite ways in both of us, the nutrient deficiencies. You know, you were hungry all the time and I wasn't hungry at all.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I kind of equate it back to celiac because when I showed up to the doctor's office, 335 pounds with a myriad of health issues, no one ever thought celiac because they think that celiac is that, you know, deficient state of, you know, being underweight and malnourished, but it manifests in both ways. And, you know, it's the same with micronutrient deficiencies and a myriad of other things. They can present in multiple ways. So awesome topic. I know we have a ton of questions. Are we ready to jump into them?
I think we should get to them.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope.
So we have a really large number of questions in our queue about weight loss, and it's a topic that we really haven't talked about in quite a while. It's been a while since we've done our last weight loss show. So it was overdue, but we, when I was going through the questions, they really seem to be very thematic. There seems to be certain types of questions where there's, you know, multiple variations of these questions from different people. So I tried to pick representative questions of the most frequently asked aspects about weight loss so that hopefully, even though we can't get to everybody's question today, we can hopefully give, you know, most people at least a start on an answer to their question. So that being said, our first question is not a question at all. It's actually an email that Nadia sent to Paleo Parents. And I wanted to start with this, especially because we have Tara here. She writes, "I've got to say I'm very inspired by what you both, Matt and Stacy, have done to further your health and your families. I am an obese 20-something who loves to cook and has tried to lose weight using conventional wisdom since weight became an issue in my early teens. A few months ago, I embraced a low-carb diet and have had moderate success. A few weeks ago, I discovered paleo. Your blog was one of the first I came across. I've been devouring all information I can about this lifestyle as I've tried to implement it, and it's been so amazing. The one thing that has been noticeably absent is the voice of the overweight and obese on this journey, or even advice specifically aimed at those trying to lose a significant amount of weight, except your journey. That specific post was the first confirmation of the inkling I had that perhaps being obese and following a paleo lifestyle is the unspoken proverbial elephant in the room in this community. Other than writing to you to let you know how amazing I think you guys are, and I'm just going to throw in that I agree, I also wanted to ask if, one, you knew of any other resources out there specifically for those who are looking to lose a lot of weight, and two, do you have any advice or guidance for someone who wants to lend their voice to the paleo community? I have a blog that I've done very little with, and I wish to use it now to share my experience with paleo as I progress through it all. If you have any feedback at all, I'd appreciate it, but I also realize you probably get very many emails daily and are busy raising little ones, so take your time. Or address it on the podcast.
I think I did email her back.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you, Nadia. I mean, I think it's awesome that even though we kind of put ourselves out there and we've talked a bit today about how that can be kind of overwhelming with the expectation of, you know, everywhere I go, I want to wear a shirt that says, "I've lost 100 pounds, you don't get to judge me." Even though I still continue to put out posts and pictures of myself in not a perfect state and to talk about how much healthier I am and how much happier I am than I was before. And part of it is convincing myself and part of it is convincing other people to say, if I don't lose another pound, that's okay, because I've lost so much already and I've gained so much health. I don't need to focus on not being perfect. So I think it's really awesome that that message is coming through and is helpful for people. I do think that there's a majority of Americans are overweight and obese, and this lifestyle can change their lives. And so it's really important for me, and I know, Sarah, it is for you, and probably Tara, it is for you as well, that we make ourselves accessible to that huge majority of the American population that are really struggling with health and obesity, because it's not just about performance. And it's not just about getting super lean and cut and looking your best. I mean, those things are awesome. And if I could look like half the people in the paleo community, I would win the lottery in order to pay someone to make me look like that. But that's not what's the most important. You know, the most important really is being healthy and doing what you can do for yourself. Like, all three of us women are moms. All three of us women have lost over 100 pounds. We're never going to look perfect. So what we have to focus on is, you know, being our best versions of ourselves. So that said, I think the best thing that you can do if you want to start a blog is be yourself. I know when I found Sarah's blog, I thought it was adorable that she did little sketches. And it was something unique that she did that not, there was nobody else doing. And it, even though she's a PhD and she's smart as a whip and she has delicious recipes and all of these things, sometimes you find a blog and you're like, oh, that's cute. And then you kind of move on. But, you know, if people are listening and they have a blog and they want to know, like, okay, what do I do to help myself? You know, the best thing you can do is be yourself, because there's something about every single person that makes them unique. Be yourself on your site. You know, if you naturally use curse words and you are just really vocal and you have strong opinions, don't try to write a blog where you're, you know, passive. Yeah. You know, because that's never going to work long term. You know, you're never going to be able to go to like a seminar and represent your blog if that's not who you really are. So be yourself, and the people who have similar interests will find your blog and connect with you because you're being real. And that's what I know Matt and I have. People connect with us because that's how we are on our blog. We are who we are. We're very real. We're very open. We're honest. We try to think for ourselves. We try to respect others, and we try to play nice in the sandbox as much as we can. Do you guys have advice on that stuff or where else they could find sources? Sorry, Tara, go ahead.
She was looking for resources for people that are looking to lose a considerable amount of weight on this lifestyle. And what I would say to you, Nadia, is that most of us in the paleo community started out sick. We either had some disease or symptom or syndrome, or we were very overweight or obese. And really, obesity in and of itself is a symptom. So just the paleo lifestyle in itself is a wonderful path towards health. And your specific journey is going to be completely different from everyone else's. So what I suggest to everybody is to find somebody out there that has a story similar to yours. If you're looking for a good place to start, find someone that's had success that was similar to you, find out what they did, and try that. See if it works. It may not, or it may. You're going to have to tweak things and tailor things, your diet especially, your fitness, so that it fits your lifestyle and your own individual needs. But really, I think for people trying to lose weight, losing a considerable amount of weight, the advice is still the same. Do the same things. Live a paleo lifestyle. You're just going to have to do it a little bit longer. Just keep at it, and eventually you'll be there. That'd be my two cents.
I don't know that I have much to add to say, other than there certainly are, you know, a number of bloggers out there who have weight loss stories. And there's also, you know, there's also the sort of transformation stories that like robwolf.com has, and marksdailyapple.com has, and a lot of other blogs are also sharing sort of personal stories, although maybe not as regularly as those guys are. And so even if it's not a blogger, you might be able to find those sort of individual stories. And those aren't necessarily people who are blogging, but people who are just sharing their stories on these other really high traffic blogs. So there are, you know, there's certainly a lot of us who have gone through sort of a similar journey to, I think, what Nadia is going through. And we all have, you know, support systems that sort of like these grassroots support systems on our Facebook pages. And we're, yes, very good at putting ourselves out there. So it's out there. But there's still, if you want to blog about it, there's still a hunger for more. So I think that there's always more audience. There's no shortage of people to connect with our stories. So, you guys were great. I don't need to add any more than that.
The only thing I would add is that, I personally don't feel comfortable mentioning websites just because I know I'm going to forget some. So what I will say is that both Sarah and I have guest posts on our websites. I would encourage you to check out our sites where we've sorted guest series and bloggers. Each of us have featured people as success stories on our own sites that you can check out, links to their information. And I find a lot of really cool resources on Pinterest. For example, the reason that I found out about Josh at slimpalette.com, who was featured on our show not too long ago, he's the teenager who lost over 100 pounds. The only reason I even knew that he existed was because I was on Pinterest and I saw a photo pop up in my feed because someone else had pinned his recipe, and I was like, I've never heard of this website before, let me check it out. And it blew my mind. So if you are looking for people with common interests, the best way to do that is usually through social media. So whatever social media you like and have connections through, Facebook pages, you know, look to see who they're featuring or who their likes are. Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, whatever your favorite source is, go poke around and see who follows who, and you'll find some really interesting people that you didn't know about but probably wish that you did.
And then once you start blogging, before you know it, you are going to be an inspiration to other people, and they'll start contacting you and asking you questions about how they can start their own blog and pay it forward. So it's a wonderful cycle.
Absolutely.
So our next question is another sort of thematic question. We get a lot of questions from very overweight people, typically women, although I think we still get the majority of our questions are from women anyways. So guy listeners, submit more questions, I guess. But it's basically, people who are just starting their paleo journeys and are trying to figure out how to implement paleo, because we all know that there's a very broad spectrum in, opinions about certain foods and ways to actually, implement and eat paleo. We get some questions from people with specific health issues, some people where their only health issue is obesity. I picked out this question from Rebecca, who writes, "My husband and I have been trying to get pregnant since we got married 5 years ago. I have gone vegan, done Weight Watchers, and many other things, which just led me to my highest weight of almost 314 pounds. Since going paleo, I am down to less than 270, yay. That's big. But am still facing hormonal issues, including my second miscarriage in the past year. So what worked the best for you in the beginning and what has helped you the most? According to my BMI chart, I should weigh around 150 pounds since I'm 5'9". I honestly have no idea what that looks like on me since I have been obese since I was 9 years old. I just want to be healthy and strong so I can raise some paleo babies. I am not looking for an instant fix, and I am desperate for low-cost remedies since we are very low income. Any advice you can give me at this point is welcome and appreciated. Thank you in advance for your time and consideration."
I would suggest she do a lot of the stuff that we talked about in the science section. I can't even begin to pretend to know about all the complications of fertility. I know, Sarah, we've talked about it, and Stephanie from Paleo for Women talks about it. But ultimately, all those female hormones usually relate back to other activities and foods that you're eating: sunlight, sleep, lifestyle, food. making sure that you're getting all your hormones in check is really the best way to optimize. And that's not to say that if something goes wrong, that it's your fault. I mean, it's definitely, don't stress yourself out. That's the absolute worst way to tax your body. So, I'm just gonna let you guys take it from there. Cause I have kind of emotional, empathy for this situation in a way that makes it difficult for me to talk. I've been really lucky in that even when I wasn't healthy, I was really fertile. And so I tend to have a little bit of guilt about that. I don't know, but, I really feel for Rebecca, and I hope that, you know, since she submitted this question, that she's continued to lose weight and gain health.
Tara, you want to jump
in? this one's really tough for me because I struggled with fertility for 10 years. Because I was so overweight and so unhealthy, I had polycystic ovarian syndrome and endometriosis, and my fallopian tubes got all scarred up, and I was just dragged from doctor to doctor to doctor, all doing tests on me, and I couldn't get pregnant no matter what I did, and it was absolutely miserable, and I knew that it was because of my weight, and I didn't know if it was permanent. But I was fixated on it. All I wanted to do was be a mother. It didn't matter what else was in my life. I just had to be a mother. And I ended up doing in vitro fertilization. And I'll tell you that had I found the paleo primal lifestyle before I'd had kids, I don't know if I would have been successful. I didn't find it until my kids were 5 months old. And at that point, I was really, really sick. And my kids were quite sick. They were 2 months premature. And at that point, I had the motivation to change things. And, you know, I wanted to be the best mother that I could be, get down on the floor with the kids and live a long, healthy, happy life with them. So, and I also didn't want to feed them garbage. I had a complete, total mind shift. I'm not sure that before I had kids, because I was just fixated on wanting kids so badly, that I would have been able to do everything that I would have needed to do. So Rebecca, this is a tough one. What I would personally suggest is, instead of concentrating on weight, concentrate on health. Ask yourself, is this food going to make me healthy? Is this activity going to make me healthy? The weight will come off if you are able to let go of some things. I think Stacy, where you were talking earlier, until you let go and you stop worrying and you stop having all these hormones and emotions and everything going on, things will level out once you gain your health. And I'm sorry, I kind of rambled a little bit. This is a really touchy subject for me.
So, I think the only thing that I would add is, you know, maybe the more general, you know, best way to implement paleo when you're starting out. And that, you know, I just always recommend a real focus on nutrient density. So eating the most nutrient dense foods that you can, and that generally means, you know, as best quality meat and fish as you can afford, and if that is conventional meat, that's conventional meat, and the best quality vegetables that you can afford, and if that's regular vegetables, that's regular vegetables, and some fruit. I don't generally recommend eating large amounts of nuts and seeds, but I certainly found when I first switched to paleo that they were really helpful for me as a emergency food and as a snack, as a comfort food. So, you know, keep in mind your intake of those. But I would generally just say, you know, focus on getting sleep. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of sleep in healing, in losing weight, in regulating hormones. Get outside. I'm sounding like a broken record now, Stacey, probably. You know, that's just every show. Sleep and get outside, sleep and sunlight, every show. And focus on the most nutrient-dense foods that you can. And that is what is going to help your body heal. And as your body heals, I mean, Grant, we've all already talked about, you know, not being exactly the weight that we want to be, but we also all hit a point where weight loss was really easy and our bodies were just doing it because we were looking after our bodies. So that is sort of like what happens next when you focus on, you know, sleep and stress management and being outside and just eating nutrient-dense foods. Then it's, you know, you'll hit a point where it will click and your body will just say, oh, I don't need all this extra weight, and weight loss will just happen. And then, you know, there's always other things. There's always plateaus. There's always, you know, the discussion that we've all already had today, which is, you know, wanting to be a weight, but that not necessarily being a weight that is actually the healthiest for our bodies. So there's always those issues farther down the road. But for now, all of those things I just said.
I think it's a good point what you just said, though, because she does mention like an ideal body weight. And I don't know how you ladies feel, but I kind of threw that out the window a while ago. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, one of the best things, and I wish I could remember who mentioned it to me, but someone told me that on a BMI chart, an Olympic athlete is obese, right? Because they've got so much muscle that if you took their weight to height ratio, they would show up as either overweight or obese on a chart. That's just to show you how inaccurate that chart is, if that's the only gauge of what we're going on. So I know for me and Sarah, probably you, Tara, we've got extra skin from having lost mm-hmm. so much weight. That's something that, you know, maybe with enough natural healthy foods with gelatin and stuff in our lives, maybe we can get some of that to tighten. But for what I've got, that's not going anywhere. Like it's, it's hanging tough, man. It's new kids on the block in lots of areas of my life. And that's just, you know what, that's the way it is. Fortunately for me, I have a husband who loves me anyway. That right there is going to be 10 to 20 pounds. Even if I hit my goal weight, which I don't even know what that is because I don't pay. Honestly, I have to mentally let go of what goal weight is and say, I want to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost a significant amount of weight. I know that I am now on my path to health and wellness. What can I do to refine that? I should eat less cookies, you know, like paleo cookies. I should eat less paleo cookies. I shouldn't eat nuts at my desk all day long so that, oops, I've accidentally eaten, you know, 2 pounds of whatever. Those are the kinds of things that I think a lot of people make mistakes on, and those will help with weight loss. But when you're not doing those activities, like Sarah mentioned, and you're just focused on your health, then your weight will naturally have plateaus, yes, but it will also hit a place where your body is really happy with that weight. And we talked about it before with Stephanie, called as, you know, there's a set point, and there's a fertility set point, and there's, you know, a set point that your body might feel comfortable with that you have to push past in some way. And for me, I have definitely hit that set point. I am at the weight that I was at puberty, and my body really likes it here. And in order to get lower, I would have to do things that I don't want to do because I'm still not recovered fully health-wise. But I have hopes that CrossFit will get me there, and that a continued approach of health and wellness will get me there. Where there is, though, I have not defined. And I think it's really important that people understand that there isn't some like magical nebulous number that when you hit it, you're healthy. You know, like 150 pounds doesn't mean that if you're 150 pounds, you're healthy. There are a lot of skinny people who aren't healthy. So don't worry about what that number is, and just focus on getting yourself as healthy and well as you can. And eventually your body will find a place that it is comfortable and performs, not perform in an athletic way, but, you know, functions optimally.
So, Stacey, that's a really excellent segue to our next question, because it's the other sort of major type of question that we get, which is with from people who are battling those last 10 to 30 pounds and just their bodies refuse to lose any more weight. And I know that's certainly the place that I've been at for the last year. And so this question is from Kathy from Colorado Springs, and she writes, my question to you, she wants to lose 10 to 12 pounds, is what changes can I make to have the greatest impact on weight loss? I feel like I'm missing something or just not doing something correctly, limiting my carbs to 30 to 50 grams a day. I thought it was increase my treadmill exercise, but after reading, I now think I need to fine tune what I'm eating. Any help is or advice is greatly appreciated.
This is not my area of expertise.
Well, I mean, I want to just jump in and say, you know, clearly we're all people who are still battling this, that same battle. But my understanding of the physiology is that you know, there's two things. One is it may not be healthy for you to lose those last 10 to 12 pounds. You might be at a healthier weight now than you would be 10 or 12 pounds lighter. So your body might be fighting to hold on to that weight because that's healthy weight. In the case where that might not be true, and certainly there are other similar questions where, you know, losing, you know, 10 or 15 pounds is probably healthier for those specific people, it's really a question of getting all of the pieces of a puzzle together. I don't think the solution is low carb for everybody. For some people, that works really well. For some people who have been low carb for a long time, increasing their carbohydrate intake a little bit is actually what puts those pieces together. And that relates back to what I was already talking about insulin and leptin resistance. I already did my sleep and outside rant, but I'm going to remind people that sleep is fundamental for health. And your body is going to hold on to weight if you are not getting enough sleep. Being outside and regulating your circadian rhythms, which is important for sleep quality, is really essential. Managing stress is essential. Getting some kind of activity, it doesn't need to be CrossFit, but it could be going for a walk. But some kind of activity, moving your body, is essential. So when you have all of those pieces together, that's when your body feels a little bit happier to let go of that weight. I know I don't have all those pieces together because I am not getting as high quality sleep as I need. I have young kids. I'm still up with them, at least one of them most nights. And I decided that writing a book was a good idea. So I've got stress. So, you know, I'm being patient with my body because I know that right now is not the time to try and figure out those last, you know, 10 pounds. And I'm not convinced I need to lose 10 more pounds, actually, for that matter. I'm kind of happy where I am, so I'm not really super motivated to do anything either. Now, that being said, you could talk to me in 2 weeks and I could say the exact opposite. I do actually oscillate sort of in a bipolar disease fashion about how I feel about those last 10 pounds. Today, I feel really good about them. I think they're good. That's okay. That's my rant. And I know Tara had an answer to this question. I'm going to let Tara jump in.
Well, I agree with you. Being patient is important. If you do feel like you have another 10 pounds to lose or so, what happened to me was I had a couple of pretty significant plateaus while I was losing weight. The very last one was at 165. I was, as far as I was concerned, I was at my goal weight. That's what I weighed in high school. And looking back at pictures of me, I think I look pretty good at 165. I'm 5'9". So, I didn't worry about it. I didn't stress about losing 10 pounds. I didn't up my workouts or cut my calories. I just lived my life and I enjoyed my new body and I had energy to go out and play. So I did. And because I was feeling so good, I wanted to keep eating these wonderful healthy foods that had been doing such a good job for my body. So I just kept doing it. And it probably took, you know, at first the weight loss was considerably fast. But then once I hit that plateau, it took about a year to lose 10 pounds. I wasn't worried about it during that time. I really didn't care. And I think that's what allowed me to actually be able to lose it was I wasn't weighing myself every day. I wasn't stressing out. I was just taking care of myself and living my life and my body responded favorably. So a little bit of intermittent fasting helped me do that as well. I stopped eating breakfast, but like we were talking about earlier, that isn't for everyone. So that's
I think it's good that you're doing what works for you. I mean, I think part of, you know, just to clarify what I personally think might be the problem in this women intermittent fasting equation, I've talked about it before. I've noticed that those of us who are type A personalities with a high propensity to stress ourselves out about every little thing, we're probably much more sensitive cortisol and hormone wise because we're running on the edge as it is. So I think for Sarah and I, who have an autoimmune disease, to intermittent fast, it's that push over the cliff, you know, like if we're running on the edge and the reason that it works, the scientific mechanism for the way that it works is because it causes a stress on your body, just the same way that, you know, working out causes a stress on your body. And, there are scientific and hormonal things that happen when your body goes into a fasting state, and that's what helps you recover. But for those of us who are on the edge already, if we do that, it can take it too far. So I think it's perfectly okay and awesome, actually, that you're intermittent fasting and it's working for you and you're going to pay attention and make sure that, you know, you don't have some of the problems that we talked about, but you shouldn't feel bad that you do it and it works for you. Like I don't want you, Tara, I don't want you to feel like I feel that way. I thought it worked for me and I'm glad I realized that it didn't actually. And I think, you know, when we talk about it, we state generally like for most women, but there's three of us and one out of three of us, it works for us. So if those are the odds, then those are the odds, you know?
Yeah, I just make sure that I pay really close attention to my body. The reason that I don't eat breakfast is because I'm not hungry in the morning. I ate breakfast every morning my entire life until I was 34 years old. And then, you know, when I found this lifestyle and I realized, oh, I don't eat if you're not hungry. Wow, that's a novel idea. So if I wake up in the morning and I'm hungry, I will eat. I never deny myself simply because, oh, I'm not within my feeding window or something like that. I pay very close attention to my body. So I will eat and I'll break that fast if I feel my body needs it. And if it doesn't, then I don't. But I also have an autoimmune condition as well, which I've been managing really, really well over the last couple of years. I have it in 100% remission now. So, and the intermittent fasting hasn't seemed to affect it at all.
Fascinating.
Yes. I don't know what I'm doing. We need to sit down
there is just to geek out a little bit, there actually is a really strong interaction between hunger hormones and the immune system. So one of the things about intermittent fasting and getting to more of like a two meal a day type system is for, unless it's doing the cortisol reaction, that's actually a really good way to regulate hunger hormones. And so when you are regulating hunger hormones really, really well, that actually helps to reduce inflammation. So the only problem, of course, is if you stimulate cortisol, which we already talked about, then that doesn't reduce inflammation, it causes it. So that's probably what, I mean, it's clear that it's working for you, but it actually may be, it in at least some way contributing to your success with your autoimmune disease, that you've got your hunger hormones so tightly regulated. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because they were so out of whack before. I was hypoglycemic in a really bad way. Really bad, comical, actually. My family still talks about it. My meltdowns if I didn't have sugar every 20 minutes.
I was going to ask if you got hangry. That's what we call it here.
Angry?
Hangry. Like you're so hungry that you're angry. That's the...
Then you couldn't get me to eat. I would get to the point where people would be trying to shove food in my face and I would be screaming at them that I didn't want to eat because I wasn't hungry anymore.
Sounds so familiar.
Oh, yeah. Fun times, huh?
All right. So we also have a large collection of questions regarding exercise with the goal of weight loss. So this question is from Abby from Newark. She writes, I have lost about 30 pounds so far. I have around 60 to go. I've done well with my eating since transitioning to paleo 4 months ago, and at first the weight came off steadily. For the last month and a half, though, I've been at a dead standstill. I know I need to add exercise into my routine, and I have a gym at work with a dumbbell circuit training class I enjoy, as well as Zumba and weights, machine and free, treadmills, bikes, and ellipticals. Trouble is, I feel guilty taking that time for myself. That and my days are so full, it's exhausting trying to think about how to fit one more thing in. I'd love to hear about how you both, and I'm going to include Tara in this too, got started with exercise. Where did you start and how did you carve out the time? And what do you do to make sure it remains a regular part of your life? My 5-year-old son is happy to join me in being active, but my husband, who eats a standard American diet, is not interested.
Yeah, don't ask me about this one. I'm not a good spokesperson.
Okay, Stacey, you want to?
Well, when I started paleo, I didn't actually exercise, in quotation marks. I started feeling much healthier and energetic within, you know, days. I remember asking Matt to go to the pick-your-own farm when Wesley was only a week or two old, and he thought I was nuts because I had a C-section. And I just told him, I'm like, I'm really excited. I feel so energized. I want to go. So I know for me, it started just with a natural feeling of wanting to move my body more. It took maybe like 6 months before I started thinking, you know what, I'm ready to start an exercise routine. I want to be fit, not just, you know, lose weight. Part of my motivation was also to try to tone up my body some so that the skin wasn't sagging so much. As I was losing weight, I was noticing that that was happening. And so I thought, you know, if I find ways to tone my body, then that will happen less. So I started walking. I came up with a couple routines in the neighborhood that had me averaging anywhere from 1 to 3 miles. And I would do that, depending on the time that I had. It only took me, you know, 10 to 20 minutes to do a mile or two around the neighborhood. And, I got my jog under 10 minutes, around the neighborhood, which I can't do anymore because I haven't been jogging. But, I was really, really proud when I got my mile under 10 minutes. And then I started doing some body weight stuff that was interesting with Matt and the kids. We did a handstand month where every single evening we practiced handstands and built up our strength that way. I was doing yoga with the kids, and we would do that with like programs on TV. And, you know, there's just a ton of things that you can do together as a family. You know, we had a little trampoline, and we could see how many jumps on the little trampoline each family member could do before they got tired. And that made me feel less guilty because I was doing it around and with the family. But I also want to say that it's really important to not feel guilty about carving out that time for yourself. I know what it's like to be really busy. I am probably one of the busiest people that most people know. You know, I have a full-time job that occupies at a minimum 50 hours a week of my time. And that's usually an understatement. And then I have, you know, the blog and the books and the podcast and three children. That's why more than ever, it's important for me to carve out time for myself. And I made a commitment this New Year's that I would not feel guilty about the time that I took for myself, because in order to give back to other people, I needed to be focusing on me, so that I could be the best person for those people in my life. And that to me meant starting CrossFit. It was something that, you know, I'd put off while I dealt with my adrenal fatigue, and something that, as a competitive person who really enjoys strength training, it was something that I wanted to try, and I've really enjoyed it, and it's been, you know, great for me. I saw my sweat drip onto the floor today, and I couldn't have been any more proud. And I came home, and my family had dinner on the table, and they were all excited to talk about their day. And, you know, part of my day was I had a very busy day, but I'm very happy to be here with you now, eating dinner and focused on, you know, living in the moment and having that time. And then when everybody's in bed, I hop on to the podcast and I put my attention here. You know, I just think you have to plan your day so that you can fit in the things that need to be fit in, and don't worry or stress about the things that don't get done on those days where you make time for yourself.
I agree. If you don't give to yourself, you've got nothing to give to anyone else. My mom went swimming almost every day of her entire life. When my brother and I were growing up, that it was something that was scheduled every day. She didn't miss it for anything. It was her alone time. She would come home, she'd be happier, she'd be singing while she made us dinner. And so we saw taking time for yourself as a positive thing. And both my brother and I now have no problem taking time for ourselves, which is really good. I did the kind of the opposite, when I was overweight, and quite sick. I exercised 6 days a week because that's what I was told would, you know, help me lose weight. And, when I went primal and started reading up on things, I realized I didn't have to do as much as I had been doing. So I cut back drastically on the exercise, and I only did things that were fun for me. And at the time, taking my kids for 2 to 3 hour walks in their stroller was fun. I got to explore the neighborhood. That fit my lifestyle at that time. The person that wrote the question mentioned that they have a dumbbell circuit training class at work. Surely taking time for yourself at work, you know, if your boss will allow you to do that, or working out on your lunch break and then eating lunch at your desk afterwards, that can really help break up the day and can be a lot of fun, and it helps your afternoon go by a lot faster as well.
Yeah, I guess I was similar. I sort of discovered just by trial and error, because I lost 100 pounds twice, because I actually lost 100 pounds in my early 20s, and then I got very, very sick and gained it all back. And then 7 years later, I lost it all again in my early 30s. So I, through my experiences losing weight both times, primarily with a low carb diet, because I found paleo really to address health issues after I had lost weight. I discovered that what worked really well for me was walking, and low strain exercise like yoga. I really enjoy yoga. I really like being flexible, and it also helps, even though when you're in a yoga class, it doesn't feel like you're doing agility exercises. It actually, because it's so good for core strength, I find it really helps with agility and balance and all those good things. So I have always found that making time to walk has been really, really helpful for me. And now pretty much my two activities are yoga and walking. Playing with my kids, I do a lot of active play where I'm like flipping them around. We do flips and airplane rides and things like that. And so that's certainly like active play. I do some gardening, which is again, sort of, for me, it's like active play. But really the things that I carve out time for are walking and yoga. And, I've run a couple of marathons. I've done that. I've done the, you know, being at the gym and lifting weights 5 times a week. I've done that as well. That doesn't fit into my life now with young kids. I'm not interested in running another marathon. I would be interested in doing more weight training, but it just doesn't fit into my life right now. And I'm really, really happy with how, you know, strong and energetic I feel. The fact that I can literally carry both of my kids on a hike if they are both tired and both need to be carried at the same time. And there's 80 pounds a kid there. So I can't do it for that far, but I can do it. And so I just, for me, that's been my priority, is more low strain activities. They're not, they are mild cardio. They do improve strength, but they're not, there's nothing intense about them. And for me, that's what works really, really well. And it's also what I enjoy. I feel really, really good when I do it. And if I feel good, then I'm more likely to do it again. So for me, my yoga teacher says the sort of the perfect phrase, do it so that you like it, so that you like doing it. And to me, that is everything with exercise. You have to enjoy it, because if you don't enjoy it, it's not sustainable.
So can we address a little bit more of the question from Abby that we didn't really talk about? She mentioned it in the part of the question that you read that her husband is not interested. Mm-hmm. You know, to clarify and help Abby a little bit, in the rest of her question, she told us that she does most of the cooking and the prep, and that she's getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep. She's getting the family ready for the day. She's taking him to daycare. She's driving 45 minutes to work. There's a lot of she going on in that equation. And I would encourage Abby to have, you know, a crucial conversation with the family on what they can do to help. Her son is old enough to contribute. You know, he can pack maybe his own lunch or snack, or they can maybe do that in the evenings together before he goes to sleep. You know, Abby has a lot of things going on that she's probably feeling stressed and responsible for that should be shared family responsibilities. And she needs more sleep and she needs more me time. And I hope that everyone listening really takes that to heart, and that, you know, Matt and I have a very, very honest and open relationship, and that helps us be a successful family. Because when Matt's feeling overwhelmed with too many things in his plate, he will honestly tell me. And when I'm feeling like I can't do it all, I tell him. And we step up and we help each other because we're partners and we're team members in the family. And so I think that mentality is just really important for overall aspects of healthy mindset and living your life, not just from a paleo aspect. And I would really encourage, I'm mentioning it because I don't think it's just Abby. I feel like a lot of mothers in particular have this situation where they do everything. And some of it's self-fulfilling from the women that I talk to. It's like, well, my husband said he'd help, but he doesn't do it the way I'd like. So it's just, I'd rather do it. And that's not the best for anybody, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
We each have to have a soapbox every week, right?
That's right. It's no fun if we don't. Okay. One last question, if you girls can stay awake long enough for it. We have a collection of questions about body image, how to talk about weight loss in front of our kids, how to promote positive body image, how to deal with our own sort of lingering issues with body image. I mean, we even have questions about whether or not we would ever consider getting tummy tucks, and that's like a whole other show. I actually think we could do a whole show on body image, but I really want to talk about this question from an anonymous listener who wrote, I have been paleo, mostly with months here and there where I ate dairy and sugar, and done CrossFit since 2010. I used paleo to lose 50 pounds. I gained 80 with my daughter and had 50 that I couldn't get rid of. Right now, I'm not at my lowest weight. I am a full-time mom and a full-time student in a program that is pretty unforgiving. I have gained about 23 pounds back since summer 2011, yet was still eating right and working out. I suspect it was a combo of stress and of much more sedentary time as a student. Anyways, I finally reached a pretty decent acceptance of my body. I realized that in order to be my version of thin, I have to devote myself to it as pretty much my primary activity. I'm currently not in a position to do that, school, child rearing, having a bit of a life, but I do go to the gym 1 day a week, CrossFit, 2 days a week, yoga or yoga fusion classes, and my diet has been stable, with some slips, of course, but 100% gluten and dairy free always. While I'm wearing a size 12/14 right now, as opposed to an 8, which is the size that I like to be in, I was pretty cool with that. It was the first time of my adult life that I've been cool with that. Anyways, a few weeks ago, I was at the yoga studio when a photographer came in and took some photos for a popular blog that reviews local businesses. My photo ended up being up on the blog. You can't see my face, but I could recognize myself. Obviously, I looked larger than the other people in the class. Yoga studios in my community seem to only attract very petite women. I saw the pictures on the blog and thought, yeah, I look like I need to lose a few pounds again, but I'll get to that when I have time, aka when I'm done school, settled into my new career, and can refocus on calories and micronutrients and 60 minutes of daily walks and all that jazz. Well, last night I clicked on the blog again and saw a comment from a random stranger that said, there is no point in doing core workouts like yoga for people with huge layers of fat covering their cores like that heavyset woman in the photo. I was mortified, horrified, disgusted. It made me feel terrible in a way I've never felt before. Again, yes, I have 20 to 25 pounds to re-lose, but I'm still down a substantial amount from where I started after having my daughter, and like I said, I was comfortable with my appearance for the first time in so long, while acknowledging that I have some weight to lose, but feeling okay with how I look today. I feel strong and healthy. I'm eating paleo foods and exercising while juggling a ridiculous amount of life stuff. And then this comment. So I wrote back to this commenter. I replied to his comment, identifying myself as the heavyset woman, and basically said that I would continue to eat right, exercise, and be healthy in spite of the layer of fat. I thought that would make me feel better, but it hasn't. I feel mortified. I took every ounce of nerve to even go back to yoga this morning. I know that comment was left by a stranger out there, not by a member of the yoga studio. But it kills me to think that people may be seeing that picture and pointing me out as the fatty of the group. I have never identified myself as a fat person because I am not fat. I have some weight to lose, but by no means do I qualify as a fat person. Anyways, after reading that comment for the first time, I feel fat, and it's a terrible, horrible feeling. Stacy, as a public figure who has put herself out there, how do I deal with this? I know that you have said you still have some weight to lose, but how do you deal with negative comments about your body? I guess I feel extra violated because I didn't put myself out there publicly. I was a fuzzy figure in the background of a generic photo of a yoga class, yet someone plucked my image out and made me feel conspicuous and horrible.
So what I've learned about people from running a website is that not everybody's nice. Newsflash. Some people use the internet as a way to make themselves feel better. So I know I replied back to this person, but I think the couple of points that were important to me were that number one, the person is wrong, right? That it's not actual fact to say that there's no point in doing core workout when you have fat on your body, because core muscles are essential to the movement and development of the entire human body. They are at the core of our body, and the more work that you do on them, regardless of how much fat or weight might be on your body, is helpful for everyone to other movements that you would do. It helps with posture, which, you know, Sarah could tell you is very important to your overall body health and wellness, physicality. So, you know, number one, the person's wrong. So automatically we get to discard what they say. Number two, I think it's really, really, really awesome that she went back to yoga. I think, you know, the fact that this is something she's carving out to do for herself in a busy life, and that even though she was embarrassed and even though it was hard for her, she decided that she wanted to go back because it was good for her and that she was going to hold her head up high and continue to do what she wanted to do is really awesome, and not everybody could or would do that. And so, you know, more power to her, fist pump, high five, gold star, all that kind of stuff. I would say, you know, The one part of this question that kind of upsets me is the section where we say, you know, I've never identified as a fat person. I don't want to be a fat person. I felt fat. And, you know, the word fat is like in all capital letters. And I think that's part of the problem is the mentality that somehow being overweight is something to be ashamed of. And, you know, Tara, Sarah, and I have all been fat. We've all been identified by other people as this disgusting state, because that's what fat is, right? It's like the derogatory term for being overweight. And, I've talked before that being overweight is one of the few, if not the only, physical state that is not protected by law in the United States for discrimination. There are a lot of things that people do and say that are wrong anyway, but at least the law recognizes that it's inappropriate. It is inappropriate to judge someone and to assume that they're lazy or eat 8 Big Macs a day or whatever you want to judge about someone because you think they're overweight. And whether it's 20 pounds in a yoga class or whether it's 200 extra pounds from someone that's on the street, we should really be making efforts to not think of anyone in a negative, judgmental way, because like Tara said, overweight is a symptom of another health condition. In most cases, it's because, you know, we have other problems that cause either disordered eating or, you know, nutrient problems that cause us to either overeat or, you know, whatever it is that gets us to a hormone imbalance and all the problems that we've talked about that cause such drastic weight gain for people. But, you know, I want to emphasize that because this person said that there were, you know, huge layers of fat covering her core, let's not, you know, judge ourselves and put some sort of hate either on ourselves or other people, because usually if you're judging yourself some way, you're judging other people a similar way and saying, you know, I've never identified as a fat person because I'm not fat. I get that. And I feel that. But at the same time, I think, you know, if the question to me is, how do I deal with it? I own it. You know, I am overweight and I still have weight to lose and I am okay with that. And if someone else is not okay with that, I don't care because it's not their life. And I get rude, very rude emails and comments from people from the stuff that I've put out there. And it only affirms to me that I still need to continue to put myself out there because it means that the world is not yet accepting that someone could go from my before to my after and to have such a compelling story and for someone to still be judgmental and rude about the state of my current health. So that's how I deal with it. I just ignore people, you know, and sometimes I write back scathing emails and I don't send it. You know, I vent. I either come home and tell Matt, oh my God, did you see that idiot comment that someone put on the blog today? And blah, blah, blah. And then the venting's over and I get to move on. And I think the frustration here is that I hope that the email that she sent us helped her to kind of move on. Cause sometimes we just need some sort of validation and venting in order to kind of make ourselves feel better and to know that, you know, what happened wasn't right and we shouldn't have been treated that way. And then we can kind of move on. So I hope that that was helpful for her. Did I miss any? Lots of things.
No, I agree with you. It really amazes me how, and we all do this, I think, as a species, we let perfect strangers affect us and change our self-image and our self-esteem within one day, just one comment from somebody that otherwise has no impact in your life whatsoever can make us feel that way. And when I get a blog comment or a stranger says something to me that makes me feel bad, I stop and ask myself, why do I feel bad about this particular comment? Is it because I believe it inside? Or is it because it's something I'm desperately trying to hide or I don't want other people to see? Because I can't be upset with that person because that person doesn't know me, doesn't know my story, doesn't know what I've been through, and has, at the end of the day, no impact and no power in my life whatsoever. So I simply let it go.
I have nothing to add. That, I mean, I've been there. I've had this, you know, maybe not with a picture online, but I have had those comments from perfect strangers that have just affected me so deeply. I mean, I remember as a teenager, still in high school, I mean, long before I had gained most of the weight. I mean, I was probably, 165 or 170 pounds, like, you know, a weight that when I got back down to that weight, I felt awesome. But as a, you know, 16-year-old, I was bigger than the other girls. And, I had gotten into the habit of getting up at 5 a.m. to go for a jog before school. And one morning, some kids were riding their bikes past me, and you know, one of the kids, who's probably like a 13-year-old boy, said, "You're going to have to run harder than that to burn all that blubber off." And that was just one of those, like, I let it get to me because I was a teenager and I didn't know any better, and I was very emotionally vulnerable. It's a hard time for kids to be. It was a particularly hard time for me to be. And it ate a hole in me because I didn't have that ability to shake it off. I didn't have supportive people in my life that I could tell about that and feel like I could you know, just be like, oh, you know, people are idiots and I'm better than that. And that was, you know, something that happened to me really at the beginning of my cycle of gaining weight. And so I understand that the power that those words can have. And I also understand the real importance of finding a way to let it go. And to know that it is not about you. It is not personal. It has nothing to do with you. It is their own issues and their own jerkiness, for lack of more severe language that would lose our clean rating. And it's not personal. It's not about you. And so...
Yeah, they're just trying to make themselves feel better.
So it's, when I read the part of this email where she went back to her yoga class, like, I actually cheered. I actually was like, woohoo! To me, that is right there. That's how you deal with it. You go back to yoga class and you keep living your life and you keep making the good choices that you know that you're doing. And just know that it's not about you. It's about somebody else's issues, and just let it be somebody else's issues. Cause I think it's really, really important to be able to move past that.
Absolutely.
So I think that brings us to the end of another very long show.
Well, our weight loss shows have historically been the most popular, and I hope that, you know, this lengthy podcast with our wonderful guest, Tara, thank you for joining us, quenches the thirst for our listeners' interest in the topic.
Oh, thank you so much. And when you guys are going to be talking about body image and tummy tucks, have me back on, because I was signed up to have a tummy tuck and I canceled it the day before the surgery. So I've got a little story there to tell too.
Yeah, it was
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, when we do the body image show, you will be on. Totally.
Fantastic. I had a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. Good night, everybody.
If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes.
You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I solved a technical problem all by myself.
Woo! Good job!